Turn to the book of Ecclesiastes and look at chapter 1, and then look at the conclusion to the whole book in chapter 12. The text of the preacher is this: vanity of vanities, all is vanity, says the preacher. And that is the main theme of the book. And what he's going to do is to say, I have tried everything under the sun that you can try. And as we said last Sunday, I traced out 10 vanities in the book of Ecclesiastes, things that you seek after, you don't find. And I concluded that the author of Ecclesiastes invaded my privacy. He hit all of the things, the 10 things that I pursued, and that probably you have too, and find out that they're all really very empty. Well, he begins in verse 2 with the vanity of living and gives us many examples of how he tried various things. Comes to a conclusion then in chapter 12. Now here's what he would say about the whole matter. Remember also your Creator when you're very, very young, before the evil days come. And so in one sense, the book of Ecclesiastes is written to young people of saying, look, I've tried it all and missed it all in life. There's a little poem, and I'll just read of the four stanzas, a couple of them to you. These are sympathetic lines of a father written to his daughter who is in bed with the mumps. And he decides this is a good time to give her some lessons in life. Thus generations come and go, from youth to age they wiser grow. Yet as they pass, they all relate, they learn their lessons just too late. Our junior wisecracks dodge the truth, the dense old parents, that parents once were youth. That present youth must older grow, oft haunted by I told you so, and all the youthful bombast rue when they as parents suffer too. When they as parents suffer too, as with strained certainty they surely do. Then the last stanza comes to the same conclusion as Ecclesiastes. Each generation soon is past. So sure at first, so sad at last. As ranks of youth successive rise, each thinks we are supremely wise. They each a lot more knowledge know, and yet a much less wisdom show. Oh, sanguine youth, God's word revere. Honor your parents while they're here, and you will find in later days what handsome dividends it pays. And this is so much the theme of the book of Ecclesiastes. So let's begin with it. And our first point is, what is the theme of Proverbs, of Ecclesiastes? What is the theme? The theme of the book of Proverbs is a philosophical question. And that is a question that if you'd had philosophy, you've heard discussed. What is summum? Forgot how you spell that. Sum, it's Latin. Summum bonum. And if you had philosophy at any time, you had a discussion of what do men believe that summum bonum is. Summum bonum simply is Latin for the highest good. And the question of Ecclesiastes is, what is the highest good in life? And the first 11 chapters are all on human viewpoint. So you have human viewpoint, chapters 1 through 11. Divine viewpoint, chapter 12. And Solomon will go through all of the hoops and will give us the search for this. Very important on the book of Ecclesiastes is to get its perspective. What is the perspective? And the perspective is strictly human reason. The perspective is strictly human reason. It simply says, you try to figure out what is most important in life. And he gives the things that men pursue that end in futility. The style of the book is a sermon by a preacher. It is the Koheleth or Koheleth. And you find him speaking over and over again, translated, man with a message, the preacher. The Hebrew word for a congregation is kahal. The one who preaches at the congregation is the koheleth, or translated in our Bible, the preacher. Look at him in 1, 1, and 2. The words of the koheleth, verse 2, vanity of vanities, says the koheleth. Verse 12, I the koheleth, 7:27. Behold, I have discovered this, says the Koheleth. 12:8. Vanity of vanity, says the Koheleth. And verses 9 and 10 is the same thing. In addition to being a wise man, the Koheleth, verse 10, the Koheleth sought to find delightful words and write truths, words of truth, correctly. So the style is sermonic, and it's a man with a message. Now, he has a method that follows throughout the book. What is his method that he uses? To determine what in life is worthwhile. What is the highest good? What is not futility? And the method is quest through experimentation. Quest by experimentation. In other words, to set it in contrast is this. The man who writes Ecclesiastes, so to speak, closes the Bible. He does not want to read this or hear this. He closes the Bible and he says, now, you start off on your quest for what the whole thing is all about. And you will come up with an answer and one answer only. It's all emptiness. And to use his metaphor, what is life? Eating wind. Eating wind. And that becomes the method that he uses all the way through. Look at 2:1. I said to myself, come now, I will test you with pleasure. So enjoy yourself. And he mentions in this passage all of the things that he attempts to satisfy him with. I cannot resist one of them that we have all pursued. Try to think about this. You can have anything or anyone that you want. Wow. No window shopping. You see it? You want it? It's yours. And you know, Solomon, being the richest of all men, did that. He looked around and said, oh, marriage is the answer to life. And he ended up with 1,000 wives and 300 porcupines or concubines. I mean, if anyone knows that whoever you see, you can have. Hey, listen to Solomon. He tried it. And he says, it's empty as the day is long. Listen to the man who tried it. Look down at chapter 2, verse 10. Think about this. I've looked at cars and said, I'd like to have that, but I can't. I've seen clothes that I want, but I can't. I've seen lots of things, and therefore we developed the term what? I went window shopping. Not Solomon. Solomon didn't window shop a day in his life. If he saw it, he got it. That's got to be a key to life, doesn't it? Look at 2:10. All that my eyes desired, I did not refuse them. I did not withhold my heart from any pleasure, for my heart was pleased because of all of my labor, and this was my reward for all of my labor. And he concluded in verse 11 that this all is emptiness. Okay, look at 4:1. Hey, this is the man who had it all. He had it all. He says, I began to look around on society. And I looked again at all the acts of oppression which were being done under the sun. And he comes to some conclusions. But notice it's eyewitness account. Verse 7. Then I looked again at vanity under the sun. 6:1. There is an evil which I've seen under the sun, and it's prevalent among men. 10:5. There is an evil that I have seen under the sun. And by the way, let me give you two key words. And these two key words express the mood of Ecclesiastes. Top two. 39 times. And 29 times. We see the word vanity. I'll talk about its meaning in a moment. Vanity. And 29 times we see the word under the sun. Under the sun is a idiom or a term used for everything. Everything we do is under the sun. We live under the sun. We eat under the sun. We drink under the sun. We do everything we do under the sun. We marry under the sun. And that's simply an idiom that he uses 29 times to say, and I mean everybody is involved in this. And everybody who attempts to find reality apart from God finds nothing but emptiness. That is the mood. So I think we could say the mood of the book of Ecclesiastes is cynicism. He says, I was a good boy. My next door neighbor was a bad boy. We all end up with a funeral. What's the difference? And that is part of the cynical attitude of Solomon, of all of his wives. He said, I find one man that I can put confidence in, but among women, none. Marriage and women is for the birds. And probably all of his women felt the same way. That King Solomon is also for the birds. He says, I had horses, I had stables, I had money that no one can match. Didn't do a thing for me. In the last analysis, every man ends in a grave. He even gets so cynical, it says, why? Man and beast alike end up dead. And it's cynical. And he tells why it's cynical in the last chapter. Now, two things emerge. Number one, we'll want to look at the things that he found to be vain. But before we do that, we want to look a little bit about the society that he lived in. Because he reflects a lot on society, and if I had to give a philosophy of life that excluded God and His Word, I would be an absolute cynic. Because life is a bunch of crap. Oh, we like to say things are getting better, but look what bugged Solomon. Number one, oppression. Chapter 4. Ecclesiastes 4. Number one, and would you agree that society by and large is filled with oppression? 4:1. I looked again at all the acts of oppression which were being done under the sun. And you come down to verse 8, and he gives an example. There's a certain man without a dependent, having neither son nor brother, yet there is no end to all his labor. Indeed, his eyes were not satisfied with riches, and he never asked, and for whom am I laboring and depriving myself of pleasure? This too is vanity. And chapter 4 is full of oppression. Look at chapter 8. And the theme centers on accountability. And he gets very cynical. Verse 4. Since the word of the king is authoritative, who's going to hold him accountable? Who is going to say to him, what are you doing? And he looks around and says there is no accountability. If you have status, you can get by with anything. I had an attorney, criminal attorney. Lee, what was his name? In Gladstone, the... Not Dodd. Bob Duncan. And Bob Duncan was a criminal attorney, and he was good. And I remember him saying once, we were just chatting after a court, and he said, well, he said, I can get you out of anything if you can afford it. And what he was saying is, let me handle it. I can handle it. Can you pay me? And the idea is there is not real accountability, especially when there is an attorney around. Pardon me, Marvin. Okay. Fatalism. Yes. There are no rich people in jail for murder. Okay. Okay. So can you get... You can, yeah, I'm sure it is. And can you see what Solomon is looking at? He's cynical. You buy justice. Fatalism, look at chapter 9, verses 11 and 12. Again, I saw under the sun that the race is not to the swift, the battle is not to the warriors, and neither is bread to the wise, nor wealth to the discerning, nor favor to men of ability, for time and chance overtake them all. Okay, materialism, chapter 10, verse 19. Oh, this is real. This is real stuff. Men prepare a meal for enjoyment. Wine makes life merry. And money is the answer to everything. Is Ecclesiastes relevant? This guy somehow found out about me. Because, I like to be a very pious acting preacher and say money doesn't matter. But, oh, there's something in my gut, and yours too, that says money is everything. It's there. And Solomon hits it. Suspicion, chapter 10, verse 20. This well expresses suspicion. You can't trust anybody. I remember being in the police academy and they told us something I didn't know. I knew, but I didn't know. They said, when you know something, don't you tell anyone or you have told everyone. And he said, that includes your wife. Have you ever heard let something slip that you wanted really confidential and your good friend let it slip? Well, Solomon has advice on that. He's cynical. Don't talk out loud. Don't even talk in your sleep. Verse 20, furthermore, in your bedchamber, do not curse a king, and in your sleeping rooms, do not curse a rich man. For a bird of the heavens will carry the sound, and the winged creature will make the matter known. You can't keep anything secret. Somehow, it always gets out. Okay, let's look very briefly, because we do not have a lot of time to do it, to look at the major vanities of the book of Ecclesiastes. Now, I do not mean that many of these things will not be in our desires. Some of you are going to, and I have gone to college and graduate school in hope of getting a little sense and learning some things about wisdom. And that is all well and good, but that's not the posture of Proverbs. The posture of Proverbs, I'm going after wisdom, and this is the summum bonum. This is number one. You get this, and you will have everything. Chapter 2, verse 15. The vanity of human wisdom. Oh, by the way, and I have this later on in my notes, but let me give it to you now. And that is the meaning of the word vanity. See, that's the text of the book, is vanity. Everything is vanity. And let me put a series of synonyms with that. They all have some usage in the Hebrew text. They are all vanity. Means, one, or in other words, futility. Number two, vanity, futility means emptiness. Number four, vanity, futility, or emptiness means meaninglessness. How many things in life have you pursued initially with great enthusiasm because you thought that this thing was really as far as life is concerned, it'll really bring it together for me? And I might add to that, is it illogical that the older you get, the more cynical you get? Isn't that true? Now, don't be pious. I don't trust people now anything like I did once. And I've got good reason to. I'm pretty cynical. I know there is no free trip to the Bahamas. I'm cynical. I don't believe that. I know there's a hook somewhere because I've tried it. And I found it to be meaningless. And therefore, part of older age is greater cynicism. As I used to say in high school, we would find some cute young lady and ask her, would you like to go with me up on Cliff Drive to see the submarine races on the Missouri River? And she would go. She was young. She had no cynicism, but she trusted you, and she went, and you got up there and parked. And she looks and says, where are the submarines? And then you slip your arm around her and guide her head right over there. Now, I doubt if, Tinley, you're already married, but you probably pretty early got over that, didn't you? Could I have sold you in high school about going to the submarine races?
High school, yeah.
Oh, okay. 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 But cynicism, not in a bad sense, but you just learn, I've tried that and it doesn't work. I've tried this course of action, and it doesn't work. And so the man, the Koheleth, and it means a man with a message for the congregation, the Kahal, says, look, I have made a thorough investigation of life, and it is all empty. Now, if someone would come along and say to me, that money is meaningless and it's vanity and it's empty, I could say to you, how do you know? Have you ever really had it? Well, Solomon is able to say to our how do you knows, do you know marriage is not the answer to life? I've tried it about 1,500 times. And he has lots of modern competitors that are still looking for that ideal, wonderful person and that ideal state. And we don't naturally turn to the Word of God for it. We naturally turn to let's live it out and find it ourselves. So that is the meaning of the word empty, of the word of vanity that is there. In the introduction, where his text is mentioned, in chapter 1 and verse 2. And he's giving his conclusion first. Meaningless of meaningless, says the preacher. meaningless of meaningless. Everything is meaningless. I think that's fair to say cynical about life. Well, he then illustrates what he means. Here's the way he illustrates. You know what life is? It's one continuous cycle of one thing repeated after another. There's nothing new. For example, look at the first cycle. Verse 4. Here's what I mean by empty. Here's why I'm cynical. A generation goes, a generation comes, the earth remains forever. What's he saying? People live, people die, they die, more people live. And what has been the cycle from Adam on? Life and death. Babies born, funerals held. Heard one old southern preacher used to say it, you are born with a cry and die with a sigh. And you look at that. Your grandparents are dead. Your kids probably don't even know them. And the cycle is going to be, you'll die. And you'll have leave kids, and they'll remember you, but they'll forget you pretty soon because they'll have their own kids. And that's it. That's life. Live and die. Live and die. And the more you get older, the more you recognize it. When I met Betty, I had a 42-inch chest and a 30-inch waist. But things have happened since, and no matter what I try, I'll never get that again. I remember a doctor that used to go here when we first started the church 30 years ago. I was 23. And he came up to me and said, grab these things on the side. He says, do you know, son, you'll never lose that. It's there for good. You'll never lose those handles. And of course, at youth, what do you believe? Oh, come on, I'll take care of that. And I look at some of you and I bet you once had hair. And it was not once that color. And for you that are younger, believe me, you grow older and never know it. You never know it. Because as you grow older, you continue the image you had when you were a youth until you look in the mirror and say it's not there anymore. I have acquired in the last 2 years a, what do they call it? Shingles? And I think I've got a permanent shingle. Looks like I've had a bullet hole go in there. So that if I would go swimming, a young lady would say, ooh, a leper. And so, as Ecclesiastes becomes then a very important book, what is there in life that you can build in that gets better and better and better and better and better and better? When everything on the physical side gets worse and worse and worse and worse. That's very poetically expressed in chapter 12. Remember, God, he says, because the day is coming, verse 3, that the watchmen of the house tremble. You know, your hands, they kind of have a little shake they didn't used to have. The mighty men stoop, shoulders, you're hunched over. The grinding ones stand idle because they're few. What do you think that is? Your teeth fall out. I am cycling back. I used to take magnificent care of my teeth. Then they began to deteriorate. And then I had to pay some $4,000 to get them put back together, and now I'm taking care of them again. Because had I not, the grinders would be very few. Those who look through the windows grow dim. Are you as far as I am from glasses to bifocals? Until I was at the grocery store, couldn't do this, couldn't do this. So I got something in between, trifocals, so I could look at a reasonable distance. That's happening to all of us. The doors on the street are shut as the sound of the grinding mill is slow. Your hearing goes. One will arise at the sound of a bird. Anyone at the stage where you wake up easily, it didn't take a whole lot of noise. I remember in college being in a dorm where they could carry the thing away and I never wake up. And now every morning, those Canadian geese, it only takes one. Quack! I'm up. And so forth. Verse 7, the dust will return to the earth as it was, and the spirit will return to God who gave it. Emptiness of emptiness, says the preacher. It's all empty. Okay, back then to a few of the emptinesses. Look at 4:16. Or no, go back farther than that. We didn't begin with the first one. Look at 2:15 and 16. Then I said to myself, as the fate of the fool it will also befall me. Why then have I been extremely wise? So I said to myself, all of my learning is empty too. I go to the same place that the fool goes. Now this is cynical. So many people will work all of their life so hard to leave something to their kids. And Solomon says, you know, the people that get your goods and that you get their inheritance. This is very pertinent because Betty was talking at supper tonight. What are we going to give to Audrey and Elliot and David and Greg? And I said, as of yet, not a thing. But she thinks we ought to plan and put names on the back of objects that will be yours when I die. I plan only to leave one thing. The cost of my funeral. And no, I don't have a plot. Why should I waste money on a plot? Verse 18. Thus I hated all the fruit of my labor for which I had labored under the sun. For I must leave it to the man who will come after me. And that's not all that bad. But verse 19. Who knows whether he will be a wise man or a fool. Yet he will have control over all the fruit of my labor, for which I have labored by acting wisely under the sun. This too is nothing. It's empty. 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 Now I don't mean to ruin any inheritances that may be planned. But there is a question. Occasionally you'll have people say, well, I want to leave money to my grandchild. And I always say, don't do it. Don't do it. Keep it in your name. Because that cute little cooing baby may spend it all on dope. It's happened.
He might be a fool. Don't all children start out sweet? But do they all grow up sweet? Betty, you can probably give us many illustrations from teaching second grade for almost 40 years of children that were so sweet. And then you look at them now, and where do you see some of them? Criminal? In jail? Dope heads? It happens. And this is what Solomon is saying. I would leave something to my little grandkid, but I don't know if my grandkid's going to be a fool or not. And that's one of the things he becomes very cynical about as far as life is concerned. 4:4. I will outcompete my neighbor, and I will win, and I will gain more toys than he has. I'm a competitor. 4:4. I have seen that every labor and every skill which is done is the result of rivalry between man and his neighbor. We often say, dog eat dog. And isn't that what is out there? Isn't it basically dog eat dog? And he's very cynical about life. Okay, let's look at the one about human run out of time, and I don't want to. How about human awards? Chapter 8, verse 10. So then I have seen the wicked buried, those who used to go in and out from the holy place, and they are soon forgotten. The astute is emptiness. I want my name to go down in fame. I enjoy taking people on tours of Kansas City. And one of the things I like to show them is the Kansas City Jazz District down at 18th and Vine. And I often will pull up in front of one of the churches and I say, did you know this is a high school senior even? And I will say, do you know that's where Count Basie used to play the organ? And they say, who? Even some of them, I understand, say, do you remember President Reagan? Who? It doesn't last. Fame doesn't last. And so he concludes in verse 10 that this also is vanity. And I've listed some of the other ones for you on your card. Look at 7:4. Frivolity. You might as well be frivolous. Nothing else counts. Because of this, the mind of the wise is in the house of mourning, while the mind of fools is in the house of pleasure. Look at chapter 2. Here is his experiment with life that says, come now, I will test you with pleasure. So enjoy yourself. And behold, he gives his conclusion ahead. This is meaningless too. Verse 2, the big laugh. The big laugh. Verse 3, I explored with the mind how to stimulate my body with wine, and my mind was guiding me wisely, how to take hold of folly and see what good there is for the sons of men to do under heaven for a few years of their lives. And I know if you're younger than I, you will not believe this, but you will not believe how fast it goes. I mean, it is gone, and you say, where did it go? Any of you ask that? What happened to it all? It went so fast. Look at verse 4. I enlarged my works. I built houses. Notice the plural. Houses for myself. I planted vineyards. I made gardens and parks for myself. I planted them, all kinds of fruit trees. I made ponds of water for myself from which to irrigate the forest of growing trees. I brought male and female slaves. And I have thought so many times, oh, how wonderful it would be to own a slave. Cut the yard. Fix this, fix that. Solomon could do it. I possess flocks and herds larger than all those who preceded me in Jerusalem. I collected for myself silver and gold and the treasure of kings and provinces. I provided my own private music department, had many concubines. Then I became great and increased more than all who preceded me in Jerusalem. My wisdom stood with me. All that my eyes desired, I did not refuse them. I did not withhold my heart from any pleasure, for my heart was pleased because of all my labor, and this was my reward. Thus I considered, verse 11, all of my activities which my hands had done, the labor which I exerted, and behold, here's the key, all was meaningless. And literally, eating of wind. Can you think of anything more delicious than to come home in the evening and say, here on the table is your bowl of wind. There's nothing in it but wind. Eat it. And that's what Paul said, or that's what Solomon says. And so forth, throughout the rest of the book, he has philosophical thoughts. He has philosophical thoughts. He has general observations. And then finally, he sums it up. And let's sum up our study for tonight with chapter 12, verse 1. Here's the conclusion of the whole book. As he says, there's nothing else to try. I've tried it all. Well, here is my exhortation. Refocus when you're young. Remember also your Creator in the days of your youth, before the evil days come and the years draw near when you will say, I have no delight in life. Now this is truly a cynical book, but doesn't it carry a powerful message of what we really ought to pursue and look for in life? Oh, one other thing, and we've got, I believe, time for it. Go back to 1:3. We started it and didn't finish it. One generation comes, the other goes. People live and die. Okay. Verse 5. Sun comes up, sun goes down. Seen that since I was born. One boring cycle. The rivers flow to the sea, yet the sea is not full. Why is that? There is a water cycle, isn't it? Waters run to the lakes. The lakes evaporate and become clouds. The clouds rain into the rivers. The rivers go to the sea. It evaporates into the clouds. And the clouds, that's life. That's life. One non-ending cycle after another. And verse 8, I'll tell you something. There's nothing you can see with your eye that will ever satisfy it. The eye is not satisfied with seeing,
And I don't care what you may let in your ear. The ear can never be filled with hearing. I happen to be a lover of classical music and keep my radio tuned on 96.5 because that's a classical station. And sometimes you hear music that is so gorgeous, so beautiful. But I can have depression that night, can you? Does the beautiful music that you heard solve the depression? For a little while, then we're all back to the same thing. And that's what the author of Ecclesiastes says. I've tried and I've found that nothing satisfied, but I will give advice. Seek to know the Lord while you are young, and then you will have something that will last. I gave this particular message, not in this length, at several baccalaureates, one many years ago at Oak Park, and I was amazed at the response. Dave, were you in school then? That's been how long? 20 years. And I bet you a whole bunch of that audience have tried wives and husbands, jobs, and wealth, and homes, and nice things. But it never lasts. You see, man has an insatiable wanter. The more you want, the more it stretches. Your wanter is rubber. It's a rubber bag, and the more you get, the more you want. I was so thrilled when I, by myself, could fly a little two-place Cessna 152. Didn't have much in the way of instruments. And my wanter got bigger. And I bought in with guys who had a twin Apache and a Bonanza. Oh, that was, and I was so satisfied until they came out with some new instruments, and I just had to have them, and I got them. I would today, if my wanter dictated, have a G4. Do you know what a G4 is? Gulfstream 4. It is such an airplane. It has bedrooms, offices, kitchens, dining rooms in one plane. And I'm sure if I had one for the last year, I would begin, that rubber wanter would stretch and say, I don't like that color. I would be much happier in a different color. And by the way, there's nothing wrong with advertisement. But don't they catch us all? They know what to appeal to. Your wanter. Something bigger, better, that they want to sell you. And Paul had the secret. I've learned in whatever state I am therewith to be content. Whether I have much or have little, it doesn't depend on anything but my knowledge of God. This is a good book in the Old Testament. Father, we're thankful for your word and your truth in Christ's name. Amen.